Hi, I'm Mark Brody, and this is the Friday Newscap Podcast. Each week, we review the biggest stories with experts, reporters, and commentators to put the news in perspective. Here's this week's episode.
There's a scale of idealism versus practicality in the budget. And, you know, you've got to be practical. You can't let the good get trampled because you're waiting for the excellent. But some people just always stay on that idealism. They never vote for the budget. These people who never get bills passed.
What is disrespectful is to force people here for 2 months. We should have been home 2 months ago. And if you can't get your members' bills over here, that's a problem.
This bill is definitely not an investment in a baseball franchise. That would be unconstitutional. What this is an investment in a stadium district that is government owned.
But two, now we are compelled to file a counterclaim to end this once and for all. We don't start fights at the Board of Supervisors, but we finish them.
I don't really appreciate being prejudged by folks saying, oh, he's just gonna be a lower basin or an Arizona partisan. I call that projection.
There are many, many problems with the so-called Big Beautiful Bill that came out of the House of Representatives. And on some of the issues, the Senate is moving in the right direction. On other issues, they're moving in the wrong direction.
And with me to talk about budget drama at the state capitol overnight, the ongoing fight between Maricopa County supervisors and recorder and more, are Paul Bentz of High Ground. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning.
And Attorney Tom Ryan. Tom, good morning to you.
Good morning, Mark.
So, Paul, I assume that you were up at 2 o'clock in the morning this morning when the Senate wrapped up its work. Thank you for still coming in just a few hours later. Seems like a few one-fingered salutes maybe between the two chambers at the legislature yesterday.
Well, fortunately, I was asleep in my bed, but I know some of my colleagues were not. I did get texts at 2 a.m. And if you wonder why the listenership is down potentially this morning, it's, you know, folks are starting to wake up, have their coffee. Hopefully they're waking up with us. Yeah, it certainly seems like a contentious relationship between the House and the Senate right now. You had the Senate come together with a budget bill that was ostensibly going to be sent over to the House. And instead of working on it today and maybe tomorrow and trying to get it done before the end of the weekend, the House adjourned until Monday. Seeing that, then we saw the Senate turn around, pass their bills about 2 o'clock, and then abruptly end the session without the concurrence of the House, which is fairly unheard of in Arizona politics.
Yeah, Tom, it seems like, and it's not necessarily contention just between the House and Senate. It seems contention between Republican leadership in the House and Senate.
Oh my, yes. This is a fight for the MAGA base. They are the disputes about what's going to get funded in the state of Arizona is dividing these people. You know, what's interesting between the Senate and the House, they're both led by the Republican Party. They're showing that they are just as dysfunctional as the Arizona Democratic Party right
now. We'll get to that.
It's really sad because this is something that the budget, it should be the priority every session. That should be done first. And then you can nibble around the edges and all the culture war issues and everything else that they like to fight about. But the budget should have been something that should have been addressed up front and a long time ago. And now we end up with these partisan politics, not only between Democrats and Republicans, but within the Republican Party itself.
Yeah. So, Paul, like, what's the end game here? Because the Senate, you know, they're saying we're done. So House, take it or leave it on the budget. The House, of course, late last week passed their own budget, which was policy-wise, money-wise, not super different, but policy-wise, pretty different from the Senate's.
Right. I mean, one of the challenges is that one of them is clearly negotiated with the governor and the other one was clearly not.
Yeah.
And there's some different priorities here. The Republicans want to significantly cut Medicaid, which I think is a big mistake. They also want to stop the enrollment of childless adults onto the Medicaid expansion that was passed and has been incredibly successful for the state, which is, again, I think a mistake. So there's some different politics here. There's also bills on both sides that have been passed around that are priorities for some of the legislators that they've been trying to hold out their votes or, you know, trying to negotiate that as part of the budget discussion. And basically, the Senate put an end to that. They passed their bills. They sent them to the House and said they want to end the session. The House doesn't necessarily need to accept that. In fact, I don't think that they will, which will bring people back. The unfortunate thing, and that most folks may not know, is that there is a huge wedding coming up in Italy, and many legislators are going to this Italian wedding. So it's not because our state's running out of money. It's not the July 1st budget deadline that's driving these budget negotiations. It's a grand, beautiful wedding in Italy that's driving this deadline that we're looking at.
It is worth noting, though, that there is another deadline, that, of course, the end of the fiscal year, which is a week from Monday.
Right. So we could be facing a government shutdown because, one, somebody wants to go to a wedding in Italy, and two, they can't get their act together. And I just want to address one thing that Paul brought up because it's an important issue, the cuts to Medicaid and Medicaid expansion. Those are financially harmful to the state of Arizona, not only to the individuals who need Medicaid coverage, which we call access here in Arizona. Mm-hmm. But it's going to do damage to rural healthcare facilities and restrict and reduce healthcare facilities availability in rural areas. That's not a good thing.
And that's been one of the priorities and what the governor has negotiated. And it's part of what is in the bipartisan proposal that was passed out of the Senate. But what we saw is several of the more conservative legislators, some of the MAGA legislators, as Tom was calling them, not support it and vote no. And in fact, some have leveled criticisms against the Speaker of the House, who's running for Attorney General.
Senate President.
The Senate President, who's now running for Attorney General, that he's not proposing an actual Republican budget, but rather that this is a Democratic budget, you know, backed by the governor.
And we did hear a lot of that for Republican senators who voted against it. And presumably you'll hear that when the House comes back and takes this up or does something else, right?
I think so. It also portends what's going to happen next year for the Senate president race. I think there's some, you know, machinations behind the scenes, but as we know, as you just mentioned, Senate President Peterson is running for Attorney General. He will not be back. There will be a new Senate president. There are two senators who are both term limited that were former speakers of the House in both Gowin and Mesnard who are not going to be eligible. So you're looking at really what does it shape up for the Senate president race next year? It's presumed to be T.J. Shope versus Janae Shamp is sort of the general consensus of where it's likely to go. But one voted for the budget, one did not vote for the budget. And I think that budget fight is going to carry over to next year.
I just want to bring up one thing about the government shutdown. It's going to be owned by the Republican Party in the legislature, and a government shutdown in the state of Arizona means essential services are going to be cut. It's going to be noticed, and in this time frame, when the economy is not doing well, it's going to be noticed at the ballot box next year, is my best guess.
Tom, let me stick with you and ask you about one other bill the Senate did pass yesterday, which was a bill dealing with Chase Field, helping the Diamondbacks do some upgrades and maintenance to Chase Field. This is a bill that has been going through a lot of different iterations over the course of the year in terms of, are we going to allow the team to divert sales tax money? Is it going to be bonding? Like, what's it going to be? How much is it going to be? This seems like one that at the end of the day seems to have bipartisan support. There's been a lot of negotiations on this.
Oh, yeah. No, there's a lot of moving parts. And here's the thing about having a professional sports team in your community. Once you get it, you can't get rid of it. And I'm not saying that to be mean or cruel or funny, but these are massive structures that they build, like, the Chase Field. I always think of it as the Bob Still. But here's
but old school.
Oh, yeah, I'm old school, baby. I was here when the Hindenburg went down. But the thing about what they're doing is, one, they're capping the amount of money that is going to be public money. That's good. But they're going to be raiding other tax funds to make up for it. And they're making the Kendrick family put in up to $250,000, but quarter of a billion, but that's kind of a squishy commitment, I think, from the way I read it. But you know, once you get a team, you either got to play ball or you got to see them go, like what happened with the Coyotes.
Yeah. Well, and Paul, politically speaking, anyway, one of the big holdups previously had been that the city of Phoenix, Mayor Kay Gallego, was not on board. Maricopa County supervisors were a little bit iffy in terms of how much tax money they would lose if it was diverted to the stadium district. It seems as though those entities are now on board, which seemingly means if the legislature sends this to the governor, she'll sign it.
It does appear that way. And anytime you can pay $250 million to get $500 million, I think most folks are going to do that. Phoenix got their sales tax capped at about $3.5 or $3 million, something like that, out of their sales tax. It also taps into other sales tax sources. There's a bit of irony here that the Kendricks spent a lot of time supporting their group, the Free Enterprise Club, which came out against the Prop 479 half-cent sales tax for transportation. That fund is going to be tapped to help pay for this, as well as some other sources. So ultimately, it sounds like the negotiations stalled for quite a while, but at the end, it looks like they have a deal. It does look like it's going to cut into things that Phoenix has priorities for. It does look like it's going to cut into transportation funding. It does look like it's going to cut into the state general fund as well. But ultimately, it's used. They say that they put in some guideposts there. And I see Tom reading the same article I was from the Fourth Estate 48, which was a great rundown. Fourth Estate 48 has a great rundown of what's involved in it. And there's guideposts. It's not supposed to be used for luxury boxes. It's not supposed to be used to redo the pool or anything like that. But there's still a lot of wiggle room in what they can use the funding
for. I thought one interesting thing was, you're right, Dylan Rosenblatt's been on this like a maniac. He's been doing great work. But it redirects 82% of state income taxes from Chase-billed employee salaries, including players. That is not a minor thing. If you think about the tens of millions and even hundreds of millions of dollars that go to these players, that money is not going back to the state coffers. It's going to be going back to make the Kendricks Stadium here even nicer. They had been asking for 100%, but the state gets to at least keep 18% of the income tax instead of losing it all. So.
Yeah.
One other item that was mentioned is that related facilities. I mean, when you look at some of the palatial training facilities that we've seen, some of the locker rooms, things like that, they're, you know, if we're talking about flat screens in the locker room that this funding can be used for, when you say, oh, good news, it won't be used for luxury items, I do sort of wonder if we're really going to get a transparent look at this. It's not been incredibly transparent on how the money has been spent in the past. I do think that it is valuable to have a sports team here. I do think that they're an economic generator. I do think they're a key portion of downtown. So I'm not saying anything negative there. But I do think, just like in other parts of government, whether it's ESAs or other spending, that folks, taxpayers would like a little bit of transparency on how the money is being spent.
One man's Dom Perignon is another man's cold duck. Yeah.
Paul, let me ask you about a continuing dust up in Maricopa County. I don't know if dust up is the right word, but Maricopa County supervisors and County Recorder Justin Heap are talk about not being on the same page with things. We were talking about with the House and Senate at the Capitol. These two groups of people definitely not on the same page at the moment.
That's right. And once again, it's Republican on Republican violence here. It's just like what we saw just happen. And, you know, the Maricopa County Board of Supervisors has a majority Republican, and Heap is a Republican as well. But they don't see eye to eye on this. And they've been basically fighting since the second took office. And this is about the shared service agreement, about how the elections are conducted and what portion belongs to the supervisors versus what portion belongs to the recorder itself. And it's funny because this all went back to when Adrian Fontes was originally elected, and then those supervisors took some of those duties away from the recorder at that time. And no one shrieked from the heavens about that from the Republican side back then. But now this is some sort of threat to democracy. But Supervisor Galvin had that great line, and you actually used it in the recording, when they said, "We don't start fights at the Board of Supervisors, but we finish them." And I think from the voters' perspective, I think they hope that they can get some confidence in where this is going and how these elections are going to be conducted.
Yeah, I mean, there is an election coming up, a very small percentage in Maricopa County with the CD7 race, the Raul Grijalva replacement race. But obviously next year is a big election. Seems like this would be a good thing to figure out before that.
Oh, yeah. No, first off, hats off. I'm a dyed-in-the-wool Democrat. Hats off to Tom Galvin, the Republican chair, because he is doing yeoman's work there. And I'm really proud of what he's doing. Justin Heap is not here as a recorder. He is here to do the bidding of the We the People group, which is headed by people like Marissa Hamilton. And they really don't want to get an election process down right. What they want to do is get it in the way they want it. And it's really to restrict the rights of certain people to vote. Look, the Maricopa County Board of Supervisors hired Andrew Gold, former Justice of the Supreme Court, to represent Justin Heap in the negotiations. they negotiated a deal, and Marissa Hamilton and the people from We the People got upset and said, we don't want you signing it. So he rejected it. And so he kept negotiating. Then he tried to hire a group, a law firm that's started by Stephen Miller, the same Stephen Miller who's pushing all the anti-immigration activity throughout the country right now. They hired him to file a lawsuit against the Board of Supervisors. Justin Heap does not have the right to go out and hire his own attorney. And Rachel Mitchell has let him know that. And now there's a counteraction that's been filed. Quite frankly, my money is on the intelligent, smart move by Rachel Mitchell. He will the group that that Justin Heap has hired will get dismissed and pretty much be the end of it.
Paul, I'm curious what you make of the fact that this seems like, at least from the outside, not just a policy dispute, although it is that, but also like a personality dispute. Like there's some pretty significant name calling going on between the some of the supervisors and Recorder Heap.
Again, this is back to what it means to be a Republican these days and what you have to stand for and what you're willing to push up against and making it more difficult to vote, you know, reducing people's voting rights. Those types of things generally are against what most Republicans think. It's not a conservative way of looking at things. This is certainly a fight of styles. This is a fight of negativity and nastiness. We're seeing this across the board. I mean, this MAGA slate that's going to challenge the statewide offices has a very similar tone and tenor to it. Republicans were successful in 2024 using the Trump model to name call and, you know, disrespect their opponents. And so everybody thinks they can do it now. The difference I've always said is that Trump is a unicorn and everyone else is just a horse wearing a hat. And I think in this case that we've got a lot of horses with hats thinking that they're going to emulate Trump, but they will not have the same success.
So, Tom, lest we think that inter-party squabbles are just a Republican phenomenon, let me ask you about what's going on with the state Democratic Party, where the chair, Robert Branscum, has scheduled a meeting ostensibly to vote on whether he should remain in that job. But the scheduling of that meeting has created its own controversy because it's on the same day as a meeting of the Maricopa County Democratic Party.
Right. It's the Maricopa County Democratic Party on June 28th is its actual annual convention. So there's a bit of apparent skullduggery by Robert Branscum in sending it at the same time. Now, he has made it so that they can appear by video conference
virtually and vote virtually.
But still, that's interfering with the Maricopa County Democratic Party's annual convention. Look, he was a surprise election last January. I get that. But the launch of his, his chairmanship has been anything less than successful. It's been problematic. He's had all of the major Arizona Democratic statewide candidates, write letters complaining that he is not doing his job appropriately. Anytime you have a new position or a new person in a position, there's going to be change, and that's going to ruffle feathers. But this seems to be well beyond that. there are a lot of inter-party squabbles that I am not going to address right now because they're still ongoing. But the finger-pointing and everything else is just distressful. Here is a time for the Arizona Democratic Party to coalesce. I can't imagine a better time for them to be responding to what's going on the other side of the aisle. And much like Will Rogers' great line, I don't belong to any organized party. I'm a Democrat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so listening to you talk, Tom, the phrase that keeps coming to my mind is missed opportunity.
It is a missed opportunity. You know, there's some really incredible candidates out there in the Arizona Democratic Party. But if the statewide party doesn't have the capacity to pull together, coalesce, get its act in order, you know, we could lose again. I mean, we could see a loss at all the major offices, and we've got some tough fights ahead. You know, with Katie Hobbs, you know, she's not a shoo-in as the governor, and she's going to have either a very well-funded Karen Taylor Robeson, or she's going to have a very well-funded Andy Biggs, and it's going to be a dogfight. You've got Christy Mays, who's going to be up against probably someone with a lot of TP Turning Point USA money behind them. So these are going to be tough fights. And now more than ever, they need a unified, coalesced Democratic Party. And I'm not seeing it right now.
Paul, how important is it to have party unity heading into an election as opposed to all the other ways that you can get money and organization, things like that?
Well, it's pretty important. I mean, 2022 seems like a million years ago where the Democrats won a bunch of statewide offices and seemed to be united and seemed to be hitting on all cylinders. And since that time, to Tom's point, Turning Point USA has really come into town and put a lot of roots down and done a lot of very effective organizing work. At the same time, I don't see Democrats keeping up. Meanwhile, you've got Senators Kelly and Gallego, Governor Hobbs, Secretary of State Fontes, and Attorney General May saying that the party chairs, quote unquote, lost our trust. Yeah. I mean, one seems to be going in the right direction, whereas the other one seems to be going very much in the wrong direction. And there's an old saying that does make me chuckle that the Democrats could screw up a one-car funeral. and I think in this case right now, they are. Now, there's still time to recover for it. The election is more than a year away. But that being said, there's not a lot of glimmers of hope for Democrats right now. You know, they're not putting in the work, doing the organizing, the things that need to be successful.
That's when you ask, why is the statewide party important? And what Paul just said is exactly spot on. It's getting out the vote. It is, you know, running all the, you know, looking at where the voters are.
Behind the scenes type stuff, right?
There's a ton of behind the scenes stuff. You know, it's being lost because of all the squabbles that are going on. And it's just so disappointing to see.
Tom, we saw this happen in the state Republican Party, of course, with the former chair, Kelly Ward. And at that time, you know, candidates were looking to maybe get money through a county party instead of going through the state party and sort of
went through
create
Yuma.
These workarounds.
They went through
Yuma. Right. Mm-hmm. Are we looking at something similar with the Democrats coming up?
Yes, but I don't think it'll be county. I think it'll be going through individuals or through PACs and things like that. But yes. Look, for better or worse, Citizens United has undone the central power of the two main parties, Republicans and Democrats. It has gone out now it's been smashed and splintered, and so now all the financial power goes out to individuals, PACs, and anything but the central organizing thoughts of having a Republican Party and a Democratic Party. And it's allowed the extremes in both parties to get control, and it has not been good for democracy, in my opinion.
Well, one other thing. Besides money, there's a lack of enthusiasm. If the Democrats' platform is we're not Trump or we hate Trump, it's an anti-Trump platform alone, that's not going to be enough. Right. They have to cast forward a vision of what they're for, that they have a better plan, that they have a better alternative. Right now, it's just a lot of indignation, just a lot of, you know, I mean, the No Kings rally is a great example. A lot of enthusiasm there, but it's all focused on anti-Trump. They have to take that momentum, that enthusiasm, and turn it somewhere and give people something to be for. I mean, one of the things that we've seen is that the Democrats benefited, particularly in 2022, by the Republicans nominating subpar candidates in their primary. I don't think they're going to have as much luck this time around, because even if the candidate's a MAGA, quote unquote, subpar candidate in the mind of maybe some of the media and others, they're going to have a large organizing force. Off-cycle elections in Arizona.
And money.
And off-cycle elections tend to benefit benefit Republicans. They just do better. In the past, they've done. 2022 is sort of the aberration of that. Mm-hmm. To do it again, Democrats, it's going to take a lot of work, especially how low they are right now.
Yeah. Look at what happened with Stephen Richer running for the county recorder's office. Yeah. Here he is, conservative, Republican. He's running a great office. But he ran up against a MAGA candidate who was well-funded, and away he goes. We lost a lot of talent there.
Interesting. All right. Tom Ryan, Paul Benz, thanks you both for coming in. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Friday Newscap from KJZZ's The Show. It's an original podcast recapping the week's biggest stories with experts, commentators, and reporters. You can get the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. I'm Mark Brody. Thanks for listening.